Hello, my name is Mark Cunningham and I'm the Scotland Regional Officer for the SRA. Back in February, we had another set of regional training days, bringing another opportunity for our young radio heads to learn more about the industry and to improve their skills. Our Scottish event was at the University of Strathclyde's Students' Union and was hosted by the terrific Strathclyde Fusion. Our guest speakers included Alison Conroy, Senior Sports Reporter at Radio Clyde, Stephen Mill, presenter at Capital Scotland, and the godfather of rock himself, Tom Russell. We also heard from the award-winning radio producer and sound artist, Steve Urquhart. He really opened up our perception of what radio could be. So let's listen to some highlights from Steve's guest slot as he presents some samples from his previous audio works.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming and thanks for inviting me. I'm probably going to be a bit different to what you've already had today because I don't work in commercial radio. I work, I'm freelance. I make documentaries, do sound art, that sort of thing. If you're kind of sitting there thinking, oh, documentaries, it's going to be like hour-long, really boring, dry things. Well, documentaries can be that, but sometimes they're really short as well. So this is a documentary that I made.
Blackouts. My youth, when we used to have power cuts, maybe once a month or one every 6 months, I can't even remember actually. Cut off all the electric, all the street lamps, everything. One day, anyway, one of these blackouts happened and I was coming home from school. I was passing my mate's house, so I thought I'd stop in quickly to see what was happening. And when I stopped there, he wasn't in, but his sister was in. It's kind of one of those things, you know, when you're at school and you know, you kind of see girls, but you think, oh, no, it's my mate's sister and all that, so you kind of don't go there. However, we used to get on quite well. Anyway, she invited me in. We just got checked in, blah, 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 blah. And then one thing led to another. So anyway, yes, we had a great time. Lights came back on. And I left and I went home. Let's get it on. So, as you can imagine, so I got home, my mum was like, where have you been? It was a significant day because it was the first day that I, it was the day I lost my virginity.
He was a guy, I was doing a workshop when I was living in London a few years ago, with a group of people who had been in prison and they now were part of this organisation for ex-offenders. And basically they do arts and drama and poetry and that sort of thing and make music. And I kind of got to know them because I used to work in prison radio and went along to have a go at audio storytelling stuff, which was basically just taking little recording things like this and asking what stories they wanted to tell. I had a couple of themes as well, and one of the themes that I had was blackout, and so the guy had a few different stories, and that particular guy just told that story. I don't think he was going to mention the bit at the end about the, oh, it was the day I lost my virginity, but that just happened to come out later on, and he was in the room with like me and another 10 ex-offenders, and they were all sort of, we all knew what he was going to say at the end, but he was quite, he got really quite shy towards the end, just before he revealed that bit. I was trying to actually work out what a documentary is. A documentary is just a story, that's all it is. So I think people think, oh, it's got to have this, it's got to have interviews done a certain way, and, you know, it's got to have audio clips of, you know, maybe sort of 10 different people, and it's got to do this, and it's got to do that. And actually, yeah, if you look in a dictionary or look in a sort of definition of what a radio documentary is, it probably says all of those things, but actually it can be whatever you want it to be. Initially, you know, 20 years ago when I was doing student radio, I perhaps wouldn't even have thought about doing documentary because I thought, oh, it just sounds far too complicated. And actually, I just, you know, I like playing music on the radio and that's that. But it can be so much more or less than what the fixed idea might be. I started in student radio here in Glasgow, as I said, continued doing community radio. I was really lucky to get trained on the technical side of things And then, you know, once I'd been trained, then, you know, there was like the odd Saturday shift here and there working on like the sports program. And then, you know, once you start doing things and you end up doing a few more things. So yeah, I did hospital radio at the old Southern General 20 years ago as well. And then got some work at the BBC, and it was kind of freelance stuff, desk driving and technical operator. And then they needed fill-in presenter for like early breakfast show on local radio, that sort of thing. And then eventually got a job there as a researcher and became a producer in local radio. This was back in Cumbria, which is where I'm from. Stayed there at Radio Cumbria for 7 years and did lots of different stuff there, mainly sort of producing daily magazine programmes. Hadn't made any documentaries by that stage. And then I specialised in station sound for a few years. So I went to Birmingham to BBC WM, the local radio station there, and made trails and jingles and idents and that sort of thing for a couple of years. And after that, I moved to Radio 3 and made programme trails for Radio 3, and then onto Radio 4, working in station sound. And then I left the BBC to work in prison radio, which was in Brixton. I mentioned that briefly earlier. So I actually worked in the prison where there's a radio station that's called National Prison Radio, which is just starting to expand into Scotland now, but it's mainly still just across England and Wales, different prison service down there. And so I worked with the prisoners who were the presenters and producers of the show, and me and a few other people, radio professionals, taught them how to use things like Adobe Audition and how to put a program together, that sort of thing. It was hard to deal with the prison service and to get things like equipment into prisons and new microphones and recording machines and even blank CDs. And then I went freelance and quite fancied making documentaries. So I got to know some people at a couple of independent production companies in London. They aren't just all in London. There's plenty up here as well. But anyway, I wrote to a few and started sending them little bits of things that I'd made. And then commissioning rounds come around once a year. So I would send ideas, and a few of them, most of them at first, they'd say, that's crap, or it's been done before, or, you know, it's not very original, or there's no story, or, you know, you can't just propose a thing about hip-hop. You can't just say, oh, I want to do a documentary about hip-hop. You know, it actually needs people and stories and places and that sort of thing. This is another Radio 4 thing that I did a couple of years ago about graffiti in New York. It was basically about the people who were first doing graffiti on the subway trains back in the late 60s, early 70s. So I went to New York to meet some of them to find out, you know, their stories and what they're doing now. So I proposed this particular one about graffiti in New York, and it was about this particular guy who I'd been reading about, who was really elusive. He'd been around for years, and, you know, I heard that he was really, you know, still doing graffiti, but hadn't made any money from it, and he sleeps in his car, and, you know, he's got quite a few enemies around the city, but, you know, he's still, you know, one of the absolute pioneers. So I wanted to make a documentary that was about him and kind of finding him and telling his story, and actually that, you know, I would actually go around the city looking for him and seeing where he'd been, and, oh, there he is, he must have been here. So, you know, when was he here, and actually where is he now?
I've been doing it since I'm 11 years old.
It was like an explosion, you know, the graffiti explosion.
Ah, I like that. Grab a can and put your man stand up. Ah.
It's amazing what you can do with paint.
I got 25 cans in my knapsack, crossing out the wick-whack, putting up my name.
It's art.
It's vandalism.
Artistic vandalism has a nice ring to it.
You know, it had art, it had color.
It was something that unified the races.
I saw the beauty in it. It was something that I wanted to be involved in.
The subways became our playground.
From BBC Radio 4, Tales of New York Graffiti.
When you're on a mission, your adrenaline is flowing. You had all the things. You had to run, you had to climb, you had to jump,
you had to hide.
And you could hear trains coming. You could sense it in the tracks.
Just a little tune
This was my way of making a statement to the world.
So I went to New York with the intention of making that program. And I pitched it to the BBC, and they're like, yeah, make it. Sounds brilliant. So I went there, and the first three or four people that I met said, you don't want to speak to him. He's awful. So I was like, oh, okay. I don't know if I want to make a documentary about him. So I rang up the commissioning editor when I was in New York. I said, I'm not sure if he should be in it, but yeah, I bet some other people, they've got some really good stories to tell. So the documentary ended up being about them instead. I suppose, why am I telling you this? I guess it's... You can see that I had a very fixed idea of what I wanted my documentary to be, and it ended up being something completely different. Still about graffiti in New York, but didn't happen the way that I thought it would. Back to Glasgow. This is a little bit more sound art-y-ish, but still very sort of real stories, just a sort of slightly different way of doing it. Made this for an Australian radio station, well, ABC in Australia. They have a weekly sound art program, which some of it's proper weird. But anyway, I managed to pitch this idea to them, which was about the sounds of homelessness in Glasgow. And for some weird reason, they went for it. This was recorded over several months with a group of people all within a couple of miles of where we're sitting now, affected by homelessness.
That's the first thing. The wee birds will be starting to sing. This is a very comforting sign, because you know that the daylight's not far away. I've made it through another night and I'm still alive. So it's a very comforting sound. And you know that soon dawn's going to break, and then you've got places to go, things to do, you know, in the daylight, no in the darkness, because the darkness is the killer, because you don't know what's out there all the time.
Somebody goes round every door, go to do the death check.
Aye, the death check, aye, I do, aye, aye.
Aye. In the hostels. They check you every morning, like 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, so you've got no choice but to wake up at that time. Every day.
Chaps every door to get a response. If you don't get a response, the door gets kicked in.
Aye.
Automatic. There's no waiting. Police get called, ambulance gets called, the door goes in.
Some places check you like twice a day, other places check you just once a day.
In the past, I've been homeless myself, also known as skippering. Living actually rough, sleeping in doorways, rubber banks, underneath bridges, back alleys, anywhere out of sight, out of mind.
Skippering.
I think it derives from skips.
Skippering?
People used to sleep in skips. I think that's where it derives from. So when you say you're skippering, you're finding a wee place that's quite quiet, you know?
Or it could be like you're skipping from place to place. Skipping here, skipping there.
I think people in that situation don't plan too far ahead to stay each day as it comes.
When you're skipping on the floor, you're actually down on your knees, you hear things from a different perspective. You get more attuned to things, things you would not normally hear.
You know right away by the sounds. After so long, you can actually tell what ambulance is coming. That's an ambulance. That's a fire engine. That's a police motor. And there's not much of a difference between them, but you can tell right away.
The idea actually came from the homeless people themselves. I had worked for a couple of years with a group of people at the Lodging House Mission in the east end of Glasgow, just opposite the Barracks, and they work on a little magazine for homeless people called The Pavement, which you might have seen possibly around the city. It's a bit like The Big Issue, but it's actually for homeless people, so it's full of like information and services, but they write articles and take photographs and sort of basically learn about journalism and reporting, and so they actually find their own stories and get them into the magazine. So they were very keen to show how different the city can sound to somebody who's homeless and all the stuff that you notice. So that was what we really wanted to get across with that one. That's why there's so much sound in it and a lot less interview, which also was a kind of consideration for it being for Australian radio as well. And I kind of pared back. We worked on it to sort of pare back the, I don't know if you didn't notice so much, but some of the accents in there to a person who's not used to the Glaswegian accent were quite broad and quite thick. So there was quite a bit of work done to sort of try to make it a bit more intelligible, even just things like putting extra little pauses in between, you know, in mid-sentence, so that the listener's got a little bit of thinking time and can understand what was said, rather than the typical Glaswegian 200 miles an hour patter going on. So I'm not entirely sure whether everyone listening to that in Australia would have understood it, but anyway, there we are. I haven't given you much time to ask or anything. Is there anything you want to ask, either about what you've heard or...
I had a question about pitching.
Yes.
So say if you do pitch something to the BBC or wherever,
yeah,
how far should you have kind of gone in your like research and everything? Like, should you know where you're going, what you're doing? Should you have some of it done, not done? How far should you?
Well, it's a good question, and it really does vary. That thing I was looking for earlier about pitching or what is a documentary, I found it while one of those was playing. And this kind of answers that question quite well. This person had written, in every pitch you make, can you answer yes to these five questions? One, will I go anywhere? Like on some sort of either an intellectual journey or actually moving somewhere on a train or whatever. Two, will I meet anyone? Three, will I feel anything? That's a really important one. Four, will I learn anything? And five, will there be any surprises? And I'm trying to think if those apply to what I've played you. I'm not sure if they all necessarily do, but that, in terms of practically how much stuff should you have, I mean, generally, the BBC would ask for about 200 words, I think it is, or 250 words in an initial pitch. Say if it was about someone that you know, or that you've had, you know, if it's about a particular person, or, you know, if it's it doesn't have to be about a famous person, but if it was about a famous person, mm-hmm. they might want to know, well, how are you going to, you know,
okay,
you could say, yeah, it's my dad's cousin's brother or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, you can say that, or it's someone who I worked with 20 years ago or something like that. So it's quite good, you know, you should say if you do know. But no, I pitched something recently about a writer in London, and I'd never met her, and the whole thing is about her. And I got it commissioned, amazingly. I was quite surprised. A 45-minute documentary for Radio 3. And so I went to try and find her. She doesn't even have email. She's in her late 70s. She doesn't have a mobile phone. So I had to go through, like, somebody who she used to work with and then someone else, and then tracked her down, and I got her phone number. And I was lucky that she said yes. Well, I think she said yes. I'm going to meet her in a couple of weeks. If you've got stuff to tell, then tell it. But don't feel you have to have made the whole thing before you pitch it. It's not like, quite often, I think that can be the way with films.
Yeah,
exactly. Definitely not in radio. There's no money or time for that. Probably isn't in films either, but even less in radio. But if you do have stuff, or if you have started recording stuff, then great. Yeah.
What do you think, or what have you found is the most interesting thing that people like to listen to?
The quick answer to that really is... it is story. It's as simple as that. If, you know, any subject can be done dryly, or it can be done with story. I think story, human connection, and asking people as a documentary maker how they feel. You know, not everybody wants to tell you that initially, and it can take a little while. And actually, it can be the sort of things that you can forget to ask. And I, you know, used to always forget asking that sort of thing. And but, you know, quite often, even, you know, after you've done an interview with someone about a thing that's happened to them or whatever, generally people like, they don't mind and they quite like it. I think most people like talking about themselves or want to talk about themselves. It's the subject that they know best or can talk most about. So it still does surprise me that people will talk. One of the simplest things to ask is, how are you? Or... how are you now? Or how did you feel when this, you know, that's the thing that people latch on to. And I think documentary is the, you know, it's something that there isn't a lot of room for in news and current affairs journalism. There's some, of course, but there's more opportunity to get to that, to the nub of that. I spend a lot more time than I ever intend to recording hours and hours worth of stuff to try and just make sure that I get as representative an amount of tape as possible, rather than just sort of turning up for a day. You know, that has to happen in some bits of radio and TV, of course, in news. You know, there isn't time, particularly on sort of daily news shows, to go back and back and back and record more and more and more. You know, and you do have to sort of turn up and ask very quick, direct, short questions to get stuff ready for that night's news or the next morning's news bulletins or news programme. Yeah, I have done that, but that's not really my preferred style. I much prefer to hang out with people and just get to know them and then get them to trust me to record their stories. And, you know, it's a very... it sounds really cheesy, but it is a really privileged position, I think, that I'm in, to when somebody lets you into their life to, you know, with one of these and stick it right up to their face and then ask you to tell the story. It's a really cheesy answer, but it is being given the opportunity to document people's lives and to get really close to people and to get them to trust you. You know, when you can act, when that actually happens, it's really rewarding. So, you know, you feel that you've got to really do it justice. And it's so much more powerful to hear a story just told by them. But, yeah, in terms of subjects, well, we've had graffiti. We've had... I've made programmes about quite a few art forms that are very visual that you kind of think shouldn't work on the radio. But I think pretty much anything can. I think it's, you know, as long as you can be descriptive and get the people who you're speaking to be as descriptive as possible, then yeah, anything can go, really.
Thank you so much to Steve and to all the guests who appeared at different trading days throughout Britain back in February. However, there is more to come in April at SRAcon 2017. Tickets are on sale now on their website, studentradio.org.uk, so spread the word. Thank you again to the mighty Strathclyde Fusion for hosting, and you for listening.